Topics discussed here tonight are general in nature, and you should seek personal advice before acting on any of this information. And now, on 2GB 873, The Bottom Line. Thanks to IT Financial Services, high-quality financial planning. Visit itfs.com.au.
Now, this morning from ITFS, Carly and Phil, to both of you, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Here we are, bright and early on Tuesday, talking heavy finance. Obviously, the budget still being dissected and understood in sections of the community, and not just among the voters, also among people like yourselves in the financial industry.
Yeah, definitely. So they'll come out with these big statements, and it takes a while to digest it. Invariably, you'll be thinking about the strategies that may be affected. So contribution caps, for example, then you'll think of all the flow-on effects that will have. And also, scenarios where if you do go over the cap or if you have already met the cap, what will happen? So, after the budget, particularly this one, there's been a lot of information to go through and a lot of, what if this happens or what if that already happened? How does that affect you?
And we're still waiting on detail on how it will be implemented and monitored. There are a lot of things where you think, well, how are they going to track that change? And, how do I even find out information about how much I've put into superannuation so I can work out whether I'm above or below the new limits and caps that they've announced? So we'll go through that in some detail tonight, but we're still waiting for, a lot of devil to be released in the detail.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do see it as rather devilish. I mean, particularly this retrospectivity aspect of some of the superannuation changes. That really seems way out of the gambit of what a Liberal Party would do. But
Or any of them, really. They tinker with super all the time, just can't help themselves. But to make it retrospective, broadly speaking, the changes don't seem too harsh. But to make it retrospective is really quite difficult. You could have had a strategy in place for 10, 20 years and done the right thing all the way through and sort of in good faith, and to have all that to some degree undone is pretty harsh. But you are looking at, the top 4% of people that are mainly adversely impacted, and it's hard to garner a lot of sympathy, in that area. But I still believe if you've done the right thing and you've followed the rules, why be
not just that, but the problem is, I suppose we're talking politics here more than finance now, but the thing is, if you tinker with retrospectivity, and yes, it affects the 4% rich, well, you've broken the precedent.
Yes.
And I suppose then it could be the next 40% that are next. So
definitely. That's the problem. I've said it to my own clients, for years, they will tend to grandfather the rules. Don't worry, you're in the section, you're going to vote with what changes they make because it affects you today. They do tend to grandfather it. This has been thrown out of the window in this budget.
Well, we had exactly that scenario in the office where I had paperwork sitting on my desk to implement strategies under the old rules. And it was involved, sign here to make a direct debit into your super fund, and we're going to do, I think it was to be implemented the day after the budget, basically. And all of that planning has been completely thrown out the window because you can no longer do it. So that's the aspect for me that's particularly unfair. People have probably spent months and months and months shopping around, getting advice, paying for that advice, and then all of a sudden, with the flick of a switch, it's all redundant and you have to start from scratch. So I don't think the changes really acknowledge that it has quite an impact on some people's planning and lives.
And it just adds to that. People understand now, they've almost begrudgingly accepted, I think, that governments will tinker with super because people have saved money and it's there in super. The governments have spent too much money and they look for areas they can get it. Well, there's super, so they'll take it. So people understand they'll tinker, but it is that breaking of that golden rule that you always grandfather changes around super that
I think
got people worried.
We'll point out tonight, though, that a lot of the changes are actually very positive. For a broad base of people out there, you can take advantage of a lot of these new changes. They're probably not taking away so much from people from what you have in there already. When we're talking about this lifetime cap of $500,000 that you're now allowed to put into your super fund as a personal contribution, it's not saying that if you've put in $1 million yesterday that it can't stay there. It can. Well, not yesterday, but the day before the budget, I guess. So they're not really taking away if you're already in the system, but they are certainly limiting your capacity to take advantage of the system going forward.
I think, I mean, a big problem, and I've seen it coming out in the news this week, are people, say, in a self-managed super fund who've entered into a contract to purchase a property, thinking they're going to contribute the money to buy the property, but now can't contribute the money into super, but the fund is in a contract to purchase. So, I mean, you've got all these sort of, I guess, unintended consequences for people. You know, what do you do? Do you have to go back on the contract? Do you lose your deposit or potentially further penalty? And same if you've sold your property to contribute to super for your retirement. Often we talk about how, for a lot of people, an investment property is not great for retirement from an income point of view. Say you've done the right thing, you've sold your property, but you haven't got the proceeds yet. You know, what do you do now?
Because you could end up with $950,000 all of a sudden from the sale, and you're limited with your tax concessional contributions, aren't you?
And you might have preferred to keep the property if you'd had the option to make an informed decision. And the other one I've seen a couple of lately is where people look to transfer a property into their super fund. So it might, well, the example I had, one was a dentist with his surgery, and he wanted to maintain it long term in super. Yet the valuations on those properties now mean that it's above limits, and you've
got to ask about that.
Yeah. So if if the property is worth $600,000, you now can't get it all into your super fund. So,
What is the rule? Can you get it all in, but the from the $500,000 to $600,000 is taxed at 30 cents in the dollar or something? Is that the case, or is simply the cutoff?
Yeah, no, it is a cutoff. So our understanding at this point is that excess contributions will have to be returned to you, and also will be charged a penalty rate of tax. So if you've put in too much, you'll have to pay an additional amount of tax as though the fund has earned, you know, a nominated amount of interest. I heard that they will use the general interest charge, the ATO, what's that, around 10%. So they'll assume that, oh, you put in an extra $100,000, we'll assume that that's 10%. We're going to charge you the top marginal tax rate on that additional money and move the money back out of super. So there's no advantage to exceeding the caps. That was always a bit of an idea, I think, for people, because for top marginal tax rate earners anyway, will exceed the caps if you're not going to be penalised any more than an additional rate of tax on earnings. So, yeah, my understanding is they'll return the money anyway. But with property, I mean, you can't separate it. That's the problem.
I just don't understand it in principle, though. Then, on the one hand, I mean, you've got money in super, and sometimes you get very good returns on the investment. I mean, your fund might grow 10% in a year, and if you've got $500,000 in there, you've just made $50,000. But what the government's saying, oh, well, it's okay if you make money on interest, but if you want to add $50,000 in a 0% interest year, we're going to ping you.
Yeah.
Where's the logic?
And there's the same with that, because there's another point we'll talk about, which is the retirement cap, which is $1.6 million that you're allowed to transfer across to an income stream or a retirement pension. And anything above that, you basically just have to leave it behind inside superannuation where the tax rate is higher. So, yeah, exactly the same, where if you put that $1.6 million across into the pension and you do particularly well, well, your $1.6 might grow to $2 million and you can benefit from all the, you know, the tax-free benefits of that structure. But I guess if you manage your funds poorly and they go from 1.6 down to 1.5, tough luck. You just have less in that environment benefiting from the tax-free.
Without adding to add in so that you get good interest in the good years.
Yeah, my understanding is you can't top it up to 1.6 again and recommence a pension. Well, we don't know at this stage. This is where some of the detail still has to come out. Can you stop that pension, add another 100,000 and restart a new one with 1.6? We don't know.
It seems very, very mysterious. All right, well, what we'll do, we'll take a break. If you've got any questions, 131873, after the break, we'll look at some of the positive changes to super announced in the budget. Where you'll find it's 17 and a half, almost 18 past 12, 131873 is the number. We'll take some calls, and then, as I said, we'll look at some of the more positive aspects of the changes announced in the budget regarding super. Hello, Mary.
Oh, hi. Hi, thank you for taking my call.
That's fine.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just want to ask some questions about my super fund place, just in regard to the budget. In the year 2007, I already had more than the 500,000 cap. Mm-hmm. I had about 800,000. And then in the year, since then, I had done two recontributions.
Yes.
The first one was about 450,
mm-hmm.
and the next one was in 2014 of 540,000.
Yeah.
With the 3 years bringing forward.
Yes.
And would that count as over the 500 cap?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So that recontribution will certainly count against that cap, which would mean, based on the proposals, you've reached your $500,000 cap. You don't have to take the excess back out again, but you can't contribute anything further.
In your lifetime.
Okay. Well, at first I thought, like, after July I would be able to meet the work test and then put in 180,000. But you say I can't do that now.
Well, that's under the current proposals. Everybody should keep in mind none of this has been made law yet, but my advice would be to certainly hold off doing any additional contributions at this stage.
Okay, thank you.
One other interesting point, though, you raised, Marian, about the work test, because currently when you're 65, to put money into super, you have to satisfy this work test of 40 hours within a 30-day period. But one of the proposals is to remove that from July next year. So anyone
can't do that because I'm already over the 500.
Correct. That doesn't help you.
Thank you. And can you please also advise me on how would my... I also have a defined super benefit as well.
Yes.
And how would that affect this 500,000 cap or whatever? I don't really understand that part.
Yeah, it doesn't... Well, the defined benefit won't... the 500,000 cap wouldn't have an impact on that, but what we haven't seen a lot of clarification on yet is how defined benefit schemes loaded into pensions will affect the $1.6 million cap. So depending on what defined benefit scheme you've got, they can be actually very difficult to put an asset value on. And look, that's certainly one of the details that that we're still looking for at the moment.
Okay, thanks. I think before I retired, I was told that if I took it out as a lump sum,
yes,
it probably would be about 500,000. And at the moment, I think I have close to $1 million. So it's still under the 1.6. And I don't think I would ever get to be as high as that ever, because I don't really put that much money. Could I, another question, could you please also tell me, can I still salary sacrifice?
Yeah. So you can still salary sacrifice, Mary. That they've brought that limit for you down to $25,000 per year from 1 July this year. So you are still able to salary sacrifice an amount from your salary. Or another one of the changes that have been introduced is that you can make a personal tax deductible contribution as well, even though you're employed. But just be mindful that $25,000 includes any amount that your employer may put in on your behalf also.
Thank you. And when you say the personal contribution, I would treat that as like a tax deductible amount or something, is it?
That's right. So as things stand at the moment, if you are employed, you can't do that. So you can't get to the end of the financial year and put in, say, $10,000 and claim that as a tax deduction. The only way you can make those pre-tax contributions is salary sacrifice. One of the proposals is to allow even employees to be able to make those personal tax deductible contributions, which is fantastic. It means you can wait till you get to the end of the year, have a chat with your advisor or your accountant, about what's happened throughout the year as far as your income goes, and make a decision on how much to contribute, if able.
Mary, thank you so much for calling. Greatly appreciate it. I trust that helps. 131873. A lot of calls here, guys. Paul's on the line. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
It's fine, Paul.
I retired some 6 years ago, and I'm in the defined member benefit in terms of the RSSS scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my pension's quite substantial. I understand the government's going to legislate and introduce taxation for amounts perhaps over 100,000. Mine's a fair amount over, in fact, my pension. And they're going to introduce a tax on that. I haven't paid any tax since retirement 6 years ago on superannuation. And are you there?
Yes, we're listening.
And I understand the government's thinking of making or taxing that sum retrospectively.
Well, that would be in line with what they've announced with the $1.6 million retirement cap. So,
how long are they backdating it? For how many years?
Well, it's not really a back date. It's real. So from 1 July 2017, so 1 July next year, they're proposing that, you know, if you have more than $1.6 million yep. in your retirement account, yep. then you've got to move any excess back to superannuation. So instead of getting the tax-free earnings on the full amount, you only get it on $1.6 million.
Yeah.
And anything above that is taxed at 15% on its earnings.
Yeah.
So they're not saying to you, look, if you've had more in there for the last 10 years, we're going to make you back pay tax on all those earnings.
That's what I understand they're going to do.
No, I certainly haven't heard that. When they're talking about the, you know, applying changes retrospectively, that's yeah. more to do with... you know, your contributions that you can put in from this point forwards.
Oh, okay.
And they're adding up what you've put in the past and counting that towards the cap. But if the money's already in there,
yes.
they're not going to send you a tax bill for what you should have paid for the last 10 years.
Well, I'll sleep well now. I thought they were.
Yeah, you're not going to get a tax bill, although it still, Paul, it will be interesting to see how they treat these defined benefit pensions with this new $1.6 million cap, because there's no... in a defined benefit pension, it's not a matter of, oh, this is the value today and we'll just roll this amount back to super.
Mm.
Because, of course, the defined benefit pensions, or as the scheme that you're in, you know, that's based on a formula set in place years ago. So, yeah, I mean, look, there'll be some more detail on that, but no, you won't be getting a big tax bill.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Okay, thank you, Paul. 131873. Just to clarify, guys, before we go back to calls, when we're talking about retrospectivity here with super changes, maybe just to allay some people's concerns, how broad is this retrospectivity? What is the government potentially applying that principle to with their changes?
So the only thing it really applies to is when you want to put money into your super fund. The old rules were you could put in $180,000 every year out of your own back pocket. And if you wanted to, you could bring 3 years' worth forward and do $540,000 all in one go. As what they've proposed, as at budget night, so this came into effect from 7:30 on that Tuesday night, mm-hmm. Is that you now have a lifetime cap of $500,000 that you can put into your super fund, and they're going to count anything that you've put in from 2007 onwards. So if you've, you know, like Mary said, she put in, you know, $800,000 or something like that, and then another $400,000. She's already gone above that $500,000 cap. They're not going to make her take it out, but she certainly can't put any more in from this point onwards.
2007 was when they first introduced contribution caps. That's when, prior to that, you could put anything you wanted in. And, so 2007 was when they introduced it, but it was everything from that point forward. So this is why this is very different. 2007 was also from budget night, so they said from this very second, these are the new rules, which did throw a lot of plans, you know, into chaos then. But, yeah, this one to say, oh, and also everything you've done to date will be counted. But also with the pensions, that's retrospective as well, because if you're already in a pension and you've got $2 million in your pension, that doesn't matter. They're going to apply the new rules to what you may have started 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, so a few changes around. 131873 is the number. G'day, John. Thanks for holding on.
Good, thank you. Just a very basic question for the present situation, which seems to be getting confused with the future ones. If I'm over 75 and I'm estimating at the moment that I'll have about $80,000 subject to tax for this year, is there a rate of tax on the whole $80,000 or only after the first $20,000?
Yeah, so if it's all taxable income to you, so money that you're earning either from employment or from investment income in your own name, it's still just the same marginal tax rate, you know, as though you're an employee. So you've got that first $18,000 that is tax-free.
First $18,000. What about the remaining roughly $60,000?
So the formula actually is the first $18,200 is tax-free.
Yep.
Then anything between $18,200 and $37,000, you're paying 19% plus Medicare levy.
Just 1 second. 18 to 37 is what percentage?
19.
Thank you.
Plus your Medicare levy.
Yep.
And then between 37,000 and 80,000, you're paying 32.5%.
32.5%. And is there any allowance for the fact that I'm over 75 now in the present tax system?
Yeah, there is, because there's the, you know, well, offsets, basically. So, you know, senior Australian tax offsets and things like that.
On $80,000, though, I'd say those offsets would cut out. Mm. They are limited depending on how much your income is. So, John, is that income from employment or...?
That income, when I strip out all the expenses, will be from interest from the bank, from the deposit I've got there, and for some rental that I've got on a second property.
Yeah, so you may find that if your net income is $80,000, you'll miss out on a few of those tax offsets. But then, look, as we said, how old are you, John?
I said over 75.
75, yeah. Yep. So it'll just be for you, just at the normal marginal tax rates.
The rate actually is, if you've earned $80,000, you should be paying about $26,000 tax plus your Medicare levies.
So if I've got 80, I should be planning on paying about 26.
That's right.
That's really helpful. Thank you very much.
No problems.
Great, John. That's what we're here to do. 131873 is the number. You see, with IT Financial Services, you can look forward to a brighter financial future. IT Financial Services works with you in partnership to help you achieve your goals and to secure your financial future. Over almost 30 years, their advisors have helped thousands of people from all walks of life with everything from superannuation and investments to insurances and debt management. It's never too early to start your financial journey. Just make one call to IT Financial Services on 9258 7500 or go to the website at itfs.com.au to get started. IT Financial Services is Australia's own high-quality financial planning company. The number again, 9258 7500. Just gone 12:30. We'll be back into it as we head into our last half hour for Finance Talk this morning with the team from IT Financial Services. If you have a question about your personal finance, it doesn't have to be in light of the budget, although I think a lot of people, particularly around the issue of superannuation, still have a few questions they need answering. Maybe some of the previous callers didn't ask the question that was pertinent to you. 131873. Now, we said, guys, we'd talk about some of the positive changes as well, and I suppose, well, Phil, you think the change to the work test rules are a pretty good move?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the old rule was that you, again, when you're 65, you've got to satisfy this work test of 40 hours within a 30-day period. And we saw so many examples of people going out and doing just ridiculous amounts of, you know, piddling work or hitting up a friend to do a bit of filing and can you pay me a bit of money to do that just so I can get some money into super. And it just seemed to me, it didn't seem to be within the spirit of what the legislation was about in the first place, which was really saying, you know, people who are legitimately working can continue to put money into super. So given that everybody was getting around that in some way anyway, it's good that they've just said, you know what, anyone up to 75 years of age now can make contributions to super if they want to. Nice and simple, no need to, yeah, I guess, fiddle the system to be able to get funds in.
Is there a cut-off age still, or is there,
'cause 60
is up to 75? It's gone up 10 years.
So you always could contribute up to 75, or not always, but currently you could, provided you were satisfying that work test. So that's the 40 hours in a 30-day period. So as Phil said, you just try and get some work for a month and hopefully satisfy it.
But not even a month, you know, 40 hours
in a week,
two days if you really want to work straight through the night.
Where actually,
some of us do that, you know.
Yes, that's right.
Where it could be a really good opportunity is for people who may be affected by that 1.6 million pension cap. If you're under 75, potentially having the ability to actually withdraw money from your super and contribute it into a spouse's name, for example. So by not having that work test, it just makes that a little bit easier to even up those pension accounts.
But it also opens up a big tax opportunity as well, because as we've spoken about, they've reduced the cap down to $25,000 on how much you can put in pre-tax or claim as a tax deduction. So effectively, let's say you're doing a bit of work, or you've got a lot of investment income in your own name, rent from properties and things like that, it may then make sense to put $25,000 into your super fund each year and claim it as a tax deduction and generate quite a tax saving. So it does open up a lot of opportunity for people.
Okay, 131873. Lots of calls about super this morning. Hello, Fiona.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Fine.
What I've got to ask about is lifetime annuities. In the super fund I'm in, there's around over 1.6 million in lifetime annuities that have been taken out over a period of 10 to 15 years, and they're all in pension mode. And my question relates to, with this cap of 1.6 million, will I have to break the annuity to get down underneath the cap? And if so, given that the annuities are taken out in pension mode, my understanding is, based on these contracts of the lifetime annuities, that I'm going to suffer great financial loss because they, you pay a significant penalty if you break the annuity before it falls due.
Do you hold them in a self-managed super fund, Fiona?
No.
I was just trying to think about whether there was some way to, you know, on the accounts, distinguish between which portion of the fund, whether it's in, you know, the retirement phase or the accumulation phase, kind of held a portion of that.
In the pension phase, in retirement phase, and, you know, managed fund.
I'm not sure if you have an answer, but I did see there is actually a proposal in the budget to give some concessional tax to lifetime annuities. Are yours lifetime annuities, or are they fixed-term annuities?
Well, they're called lifetime annuities. They're 15 years long, and they're only recently taken out in the last 12 to 18 months.
Look, Fiona, I think as things stand now, unfortunately, they would still be counting those lifetime annuities in that 1.6 cap. I guess potentially it sounds like you might have more than one lifetime annuity running together.
Correct.
So potentially you can, you know, not have to break the whole lot. You could target one of the annuities. But, yeah, I mean, look, that's a really good question. I mean, you're looking into that contract and legislation will demand that you move it across. Keep in mind, and this is the same for all the changes, none of this is legislated yet. And last time we had major superannuation changes, over the next few weeks, they did tweak those rules a little bit to try and stop this type of situation happening, because the intention is not that you have an immediate financial loss. The intention is just to limit your tax benefits going forward. But yeah, look, just reading everything to date, I would say you're still going to have to restructure to keep under that.
The way the contract reads, excuse me, with these annuities is that if it's broken before, during the period of the lifetime, which is 15 years, and broken early on in the contract, not only do you lose the interest that has been made during that period, which, as I said, 12 to 18 months, but they also take your capital.
Yeah, so there's often an economic cost that they factor in. I would really like to look into this in more detail, though, because it's quite a unique scenario. But also, just given that there were some announcements in the budget specifically relating to lifetime annuities, I'd really like to get my head around those a bit more and how they might apply to you. If you want to call our office during the week, we'd be happy to spend a bit of time looking into it. And if there's something, you know, in more detail and something specific to you we can help with, we'd be happy to do it.
Oh, good. All right. Well, that'd be great. I'll look up for the office phone number.
Yes.
Yes, do that, Fiona. We'll give that shortly. Thank you so much for the call. 131873 is our number. Now, just talking about all of this, any changes announced on budget night to try to address people who perhaps don't approach super in the way that they should? That is that those, for example, who pull all of the super they've got out as a lump sum the moment they retire and pay off the mortgage?
No. So absolutely nothing done on that end. So once you're over 60, super's still completely tax-free. Once you're retired or once you reach age 65, whichever comes first, you've got unlimited access. You can still take out the whole lot and go to the casino tomorrow if you wanted to.
So you think, like, why tinker at the top end and then leave loopholes like that which go completely against the spirit of super? I mean, if they're trying to clamp down on people who, quote-unquote, abuse super...
I say, hey, Michael, don't encourage them to limit our privileges any further.
Well, I'd stop people doing that.
Mm.
I mean, no one, really. I mean, let's be honest. The super's there to fund your retirement. It's not there to pay off your mortgage.
It is, but how would you feel if, I don't know, you you knew you weren't that well, you didn't think your life expectancy was going to be as long as the life tables said, you know, you're going to live to 85, but you're particularly unhealthy, you think you're only going to live to 75 and you want to spend that money. How do you factor that in? Based on what you're saying, that person would be restricted and on getting out larger amounts.
They would be,
it's really giving individuals at least some control of their own funds to say, well, you know, you make a wise decision on how you spend it.
And yes, you do go without that control for, you know, a considerable amount of time. So you're already, I mean, you've given up control for quite some time, I think.
To at least 60, yeah.
But we've heard it before, proposals to make, say, force you to make 50%, you know, has to be a pension account and things like that. So, and we'll definitely see that come up again.
And that's where you've got to be careful too, because as our last caller pointed out, you know, you lock yourself into these lifetime arrangements and things change. In her case, it's a legislative change, but what if it was a health change or some urgent need or a family member needing assistance and you've locked all your money into these, you know, an annuity, a lifetime annuity where you can't get your capital out without huge penalties. So I do think there needs to be a balance between certainty and guarantees and steady income and the ability to still be able to get lump sums of capital as required.
On the email, Siv wants to know, just a quick one, were there any changes to asset protection announced in last Tuesday's budget? And if so, what were they?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I mean, asset protection sometimes can relate to, I mean, there are products out there that you can guarantee to get your money back in 10 years' time. You basically pay a fee for that. And I haven't seen any change in that kind of product.
That tends to be more a product thing as opposed to a legislative mechanism that would be controlled by the budget. There was certainly a lot of talk in the budget that these measures will encourage people to start looking at trust structures and things like that. So potentially the person emailing might be thinking about that, but I'm just not quite sure.
Siv, if you're still listening, give us some more detail. In regard to properties, there has been a bit of talk by a couple of pretty high-profile economic thinkers that some of these changes could, in fact, force the top end of the market, now that super's being, in some respects, closed off with its tax advantageous purpose for them, into further investing and speculating in property. Do you guys have thoughts on that?
I think that could certainly happen. I mean, the degree to which it would happen, I guess, is debatable, but
lower interest rates, no negative gearing changes in the mix as well.
Exactly. So if you're thinking, well, they're taking away a lot of benefit for big asset values in superannuation, where else can I get tax benefits? Borrowing to buy a property might be pretty attractive for some people now. So, it could actually, and this is where they make one change and then the flow on affects other things that they didn't intend to happen. But absolutely, I can see that having an impact on the property market.
I think it's important to point out, though, that superannuation still is the most tax advantaged structure that you can invest in. It's all we're debating, I guess, is just by how much. So still take advantage of it as much as you can, because what these changes show us is that the rules change and then you can't take advantage of it to as great an extent. So if they allow you to put in $25,000 before tax or, you know, and claim it as a deduction now, do it, because that limit might go down to $15,000 before we know it. And if you've done all of that and then you still have funds left over, sure, go and look at things like gearing into properties or whatever else is available to you. But don't rule out super just because of the changes. Really what the changes are just limiting your ability to take advantage of nice tax breaks. So use them as much as you can.
Okay, 131873 is the number. Any questions or emails you can send as well, tgb.com. Just click on feedback. We'll take a short break. We will come back with plenty more with the team from IT Financial Services. It's 12:45. 11:01 here at 2GB, 131873. During the ad break, we just got given a story, an opinion piece by Kelly O'Dwyer. I think I'm correct in saying the Assistant Treasurer, Minister for Small Business, yes, and Assistant Treasurer. Didn't do that well on Q&A last night. That's another matter. We'll deal with that after one. But she's writing about a lot of what actually we've been speaking about, Phil and Carly, to do with the so-called myths being perpetuated regarding superannuation. She goes through myth 1, myth 2, myth 3, myth 4, 5, 6, etc. Many of these are the things we've been speaking about, people concerned about. She's saying, oh, they're all not true. Do you want to start unpicking a few of them?
Yeah, I guess the big one is you're saying the changes aren't retrospective. We would argue that they probably are. And I mean, her point is, for example, with that $500,000 cap, if you'd exceeded that cap prior to budget night, you're not being forced to take funds out. Therefore, even though the changes come in, it's not retrospective. But think of the person again, and I can think of clients with paperwork sitting on my desk where they had planned to put in a larger amount the day after the budget, and yet now they have contributions counted going back to 2007 affecting that strategy. So from that perspective, the changes are retrospective. So matter of perspective maybe on that one. But I can certainly present it with a few people who might argue the case.
Mm. We go on to the second one she's looked at there, the 1.6 transfer. And again, I guess it's all a matter of perspective, but that is still, in my view, a retrospective change. You're still changing things for people who already have pensions in place that may have more than that in there. What I would consider in that case to be a non-retrospective change is for them to say, right, from now on, the maximum you can transfer into pension is 1.6. But if you're already in there, then you're fine. You can be left alone. And that's generally how we would see changes like this occur. Absolutely, I would, again, say that one is retrospective.
And the other one I don't think we've spoken about is the transition to retirement pensions.
No, we haven't got there yet. No, talk about that, yes.
So, you know, at the moment, those pensions, they operate just like an income stream would work when you retire. Whatever's in there, anything that it earns is tax-free. And once you're 60, whatever you pull out of it is tax-free as well. The main restriction on them at the moment is that while you're still working, you can only take out 10% of your balance each year as a maximum. And the budget has announced that the tax on those transition to retirement pensions, on the earnings within them, will be 15%. Which is the same as a super fund. Mm. So it's retrospective in the sense that anybody who's already in one of those now gets caught up under the higher tax rate.
They move out of one of those.
Well, if they move out of it, then they still pay tax at 15% because they'll move it back to superannuation, the accumulation phase, and then you're paying the same rate of tax. So the only benefit of a transition to retirement pension now is that you can actually just get a bit of money out of your super if you want to before you retire. There's no actual retirement benefit on the investment themselves.
Realistically, with those transition to retirement pensions, unless you're accessing the money now, considering the tax treatment of the money in the pension and considering that there are those contribution caps, so in the past where you may have taken the money out and just put it back in again if you didn't need it, it really would only be relevant in most cases for people who need to access that money. But again, I mean, you do have people who have had these strategies running for a while and now have to potentially wind that back and look at changing that around. The retrospective thing and coming out, it'll only affect 4% of Australians. There's a lot of people in these transition to retirement strategies and a lot of them are not the high end of town. A lot of people are drawing this money to help reduce debt.
The 1.6 million thing is a pipe dream for most.
I agree.
But
yep.
the transition to retirement system isn't necessarily the same.
That's right. And there's already a lot of people in it, and there's already a huge amount of people approaching it. So to say that...
Because, well, to be blunt, advisors like you and others have been telling people for years that transition to retirement, in many circumstances, is a good option.
Majority of cases.
And it has been.
Yeah.
I would suggest that there's a lot more than 4% of people adversely affected by these changes. Mm. And it's where, you can talk about what's retrospective, what's not, and make it sound however you like, and you can have all these stats. Look, the fact of the matter is we're seeing these people every day, and I know that there's a lot more people than what they're implying.
They're not all pulling up in Bentleys, eh?
Well, no. That's right.
No, I can think of a lot of situations where somebody may be in their early 70s and they live in Sydney, so they own their home, and their home's worth a fair bit, but they're just age pensioners. They've got nothing in the bank, and they might decide to downsize their home or go into an aged care facility, so they sell that home for $1.5 million or something and spend $750,000 going into the new place, and they've got money left over. You know, are they a wealthy person? Because, I mean, I'm assuming that scenario is not counted within this statistic from the government that only 4% of people are affected. You know, that's a person who has not been wealthy, I guess, their whole lives, and yet they're caught up in the changes. They would be restricted in terms of being able to take advantage of super contributions and all the rest.
And particularly if they are elderly, they probably were in the workforce for the bulk of their life when compulsory super wasn't even in existence. So they're trying to play catch-up, perhaps.
Well, exactly. And they've done the right thing, paid off their mortgage, you know, got through and, just trying to catch up.
Well, that's about it for this morning, guys. I think time's about to beat. It's a very, very busy show. Of course, a lot of issues, and we delved into the political as well as the economic. But on this issue, the two do cross. And I don't think you'd have the Assistant Treasurer writing columns in The Australian if it only really affected 4%.
Now, in her defence, there are changes in the budget that will benefit a lot of people. So, yes, we focus on the big headline ones that are the negatives, but I think if people go and get some advice, there are a lot of strategies in here that they'll be able to take advantage of that they weren't able to before. So don't just throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Indeed. Good advice as always. Carly and Phil, thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
And they will be back with you same time next week.